Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of 3GT. We are so glad you joined us today. Start over. I can't do it. Kyle's laughing too hard.
I'll pull it together. I'm sorry. Here we go.
Thank you. No, it's all right. I'll do it like Barry does. You have just tuned in to another episode of 3GT. That's Three Guys Theologizing, where a pastor, a parishioner, and a professor get together and discuss things from a theological perspective. I am your host today, Biff, otherwise known as Scott. I'm joined today by my co-host, Marty McFly from Kansas, and Doc Brown out in Pennsylvania. That's Kyle Borg and Barry York, if you didn't know. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm reveling in the shout out to Back to the Future. Barry, just out of curiosity, we know that sometimes your cultural understanding is a little lacking. Do you know anything about the movies Back to the Future?
I have seen clips of it. I have never watched it, I have to confess.
Well, hopefully the introduction wasn't completely lost to you.
I remember the main character.
Taxi.
The main character is the guy who played on that one TV show, which is real specific.
Family Ties.
Family Ties.
Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox. I know he's in that movie.
Alex P. Keaton. I prefer to call him Alex P. Keaton. He was my hero as a kid because he loved Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. So
that explains so much, Scott. It explains so much.
Well, I am glad you guys are both here today to take part in this episode of 3GT. And I think today what we will probably do is just do what we've done on occasion and just do kind of a miscellaneous episode. I just want to talk about a few different topics, things that are going on in our lives, things that are going on in the world. And really, listeners, there is a reason we're talking about or I'm bringing up Back to the Future. So as many of you may know, it has been discussed once or twice here on 3GT. Kyle is expecting a child in the next couple of weeks, the next few weeks. We're going to discuss that. There's some news, some goings on down in Texas that are rather interesting. I know that my son has asked me several times about what's going on in Texas with Governor Abbott and President Biden and all of that, those shenanigans. So I kind of thought we might talk about that. And, you know, some news in the broader Christian church, with Alistair Bragg and what's happened to him recently. But I want to start off with this. Back a few episodes, we had the privilege of having Rosaria Butterfield on our show. Do you remember that, Kyle? That was a great episode, wasn't it?
It was a great episode. I loved having Rosaria on. She was thoroughly enjoyable to talk to. I've also heard a lot of good feedback on that episode. I know a lot of people seem to appreciate it.
Yeah, I I'm walking through the house the other day, and I hear that episode playing from my wife's phone. And I'm like, what are you doing listening to this? And somebody said I should listen to it. So even my wife listened to that episode. So it must have been a pretty good one. I didn't talk much in that, which is probably why it was a good one.
Scott, you're doing better than me. I love my wife and my wife loves me. I don't think she is. Other than my preaching Lord's Day by Lord's Day, she has never listened to an episode of any podcast I have done, nor does she happen to read anything that I write. So I'm glad Allison was supporting you in that way.
Yes, I am too. I haven't asked what she thought of it yet, but we'll get around to that. But what I want to get to is at the end of that episode, we offered to give a book away free, Rosaria's book. And what had to be done is a listener had to write in and give us their favorite Mr. Bean quote. And so, Barry, it's my understanding that we actually have several people who have done this. And we thought it would be only fair if we can hear some of those, and then we will judge blindly, not knowing who sent it. Kyle and I will judge who gets the book. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think we might be able to give two away. So I'll have you choose two and I'll have to check with the publisher. And just as a reminder, I was not on that episode. So that was probably why it was a favorite one. But why did you ask people to submit a Mr. Bean quote for Rosaria's book? It seems like a very serious episode of her talking about, you know, these five anti-Christian lies and things. And here you guys are talking about Mr. Bean with Rosaria.
Well, you're not,
I'll let Kyle answer that question.
You're not really supposed to ask questions like that. Suffice to say for our listeners that before we hit the record button, sometimes we enjoy some hearty behind the scenes conversations. And the Mr. Bean came out of a conversation that even before Rosaria got on, that Scott and I were having. And we were laughing, of course, and having a good time. And then we thought, how could we work Mr. Bean into an episode where we're interviewing Rosaria? So sometimes, you know, if our listeners really want to catch a whiff of this, Scott and I will lay down little chat. Well, Barry has to join in times too of saying, how could we work this phrase or this idea into an episode of Three Guys Theologizing? Mr. Bean was that theme that day. And we got to the end of the episode and we were kind of like, oh man, there's absolutely, we did not work Mr. Bean into this. So let's work him into the giveaway. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say why we were talking about Mr. Bean or what led to that.
So this is sort of like Alfred Hitchcock showing up in his movies. Like you just have this little tidbit that you don't rope me into this, guys. I'm pretty innocent.
Or, you know, for some of the younger generations, you know, stretching back to the black and white days there, you know, it would be the way Stan Lee appeared in every Marvel movie or M. Night Shyamalan shows up in his movies. But yes, just like Alfred Hitchcock.
All right. Well, I have several. So the other problem was, there was a email forwarding issue. So we're just really getting to this at the time of this recording. So we apologize for the delay. But here we are. I think we have several Mr. Bean quotes. I'm not going to say who sent these in. I'm just going to give you the quote. I'll number them, number one, and then you have to choose your top two. And you have to do it in tandem. So you and Scott have to agree on something.
Okay.
Scott and I agree on a lot. We just don't want we can't let it ruin our reputation by letting people know that.
Okay, here's the first one. Quote number one, which is actually, you'll have to decide whether you think this qualifies or not. But this listener says, I think Mr. Bean says it best when he says nothing at all. There's some truth in that.
Isn't that more like Alison Krauss in Union Station?
I have no idea.
Love song she sings. You say it best when you say nothing at all. Or was that John Michael Montgomery? Okay, we'll go on. So that's quote number one.
Was that Michael Bolton?
Which Michael Bolton song is your favorite, Scott?
Next quote.
Okay, quote number two from Mr. Bean. I don't want to be a millionaire. I just want to have enough money to stare off into the distance and imagine I'm rich. I don't know what movie that's from, but he must have said it somewhere. This one's a little more involved. It's a little bit of an interchange here. This is number three. Mr. Bean speaking for a Frenchman. You speak very good French, says the Frenchman. Gracias, says Mr. Bean.
My question on that one, so I like that, but my question is, was we spelled correctly?
It was.
In the French.
In the French.
Okay, all right.
O-U-I, okay. Yes. Good.
Well done. All right.
Okay, is this quote number four? I think quote number four.
This is quote number four.
Okay. Mr. Bean, as I was leaving this morning, I said to myself, the last thing you must do is forget your speech. And sure enough, as I left the house this morning, the last thing I did was to forget my speech.
Now, if anybody else said that, you'd be like, but that, you know, I can see
you
Mr. Start Bean
envisioning
saying that.
Mr. Bean doing that. Yes.
That. Yes.
And as a preacher, I tell that to myself every Lord's Day. The last thing I need to do is walk out of this house without my sermon points. So,
well, at least you're right next door if you do. Okay.
That's a good point.
Quote number five. This is a little bit sentimental. I love walking in the rain because no one can see me cry. Mr. Bean.
I thought that was Charlie Chaplin.
My heart is saying yes to that one. I love that one.
All right. That's the
being the melancholy person I am.
That was the five that we received.
What was that last one? Say that again.
I love walking in the rain because no one can see me cry.
All right. I think you're right, Scott. That's a Charlie Chaplin quote.
No, it doesn't. It's not to say Mr. Bean can't quote Charlie Chaplin, though.
Well, that's true. That's true. But it is attributed to Charlie Chaplin. So, you know, Scott, you know, I'll be the decisive one. Let me just open the discussion by saying, you know, if Kyle had his way, and I never do anywhere in life, in marriage at 3GT, I never get my way. But I would say quote number two is the one that I would go with.
All right. I'm with you. I like quote number two.
Barry, what was quote number two?
The one about being a millionaire.
Yep. The staring off. I don't want to be a millionaire. I just want to stare off in the
distance. Have enough money to stare off into the distance and imagine I'm rich. Okay.
Yep. And that's in fact engraved over my doorpost here in my study as a pastor, you know.
If you had a runner up, what would it be in case we can give two books away?
If Kyle had a runner up, it would be the French one and the Spanish one.
Yep, number three.
That was number three. Two and three.
All right.
Yeah, and that would those would be my two. The two and three. All right. So
yep, there we go. Look at that. Look at the consensus. Unity. Look at we should just do it. We should do an episode on when brothers get along, and Scott and I can just be the living example of how to do that.
This is a Psalm 133 moment.
That's very rare on 3GT, but. Because usually Kyle's just a chump and he likes to disagree with me for, you know.
Scott, it's not chump today. It's Marty McFly. Remember, you got to keep going with this.
Yeah. So at the end of this episode, I'm just giving foretaste. There's going to be a quote from Biff at the end of this episode. So just so you guys know,
Biff Tannen is one of the most quotable movie characters. I'm so excited to know which quote you're going to have.
All right. So let's move on to so the next thing I think we should talk about, Kyle, you do have, you shared with us the big news. You are having a baby. Well, I should say you are having a baby. Your wife is having a baby. How's that going?
Well, it all depends on who you ask. I think it's going great. Rachel, not so much. So I think we announced this way back when on 3GT. Mm-hmm. So we found out in June, actually when I was sitting at Synod, I found out. And I was grinning like a big moron. We found out in June that we were expecting, unexpectedly expecting, man, that could be the title of a new book. And we are now coming down to, the final 4 weeks of Rachel's pregnancy. So I think it's been a little rough. Our oldest is going to be 16 this year. And our youngest as of prior to this baby, will be 9 years old this year. So there's a bit of a spread. And you know, Rachel and I are both probably feeling our age a little bit, but we are excited for baby Borg.
Well, we're excited too. Now, some people, you have to be careful who you ask this. Some people you say, do you know the sex? And they're, oh no, we're never going to find out. We'll find out when the baby's born. Have you guys talked about that?
No, we're waiting until the baby's born, Scott. I'm so offended. Yes. We did learn. We learned the sex or gender, because those are synonymous terms.
Yes, they are.
For a household, we are having a boy, and
awesome.
So we have. Borg for those that boy. Don't know, we have four daughters, and now we have two sons. And my other son Judah, he's the second oldest, and without fail, he has wept every time a sister has been born, because all he has ever wanted in life is a brother. And so Judah's already making all these well-laid plans. He's like, you know, when this guy is old enough to play football, like I could be his coach. I think I'm going to move back to Winchester and I'm going to be my little brother's football coach. So he's making all kinds of plans. We're all excited.
Nice. So one of the neat things that, you know, I saw at my church, there was a couple having a child, and we were actually able to pray for this child by name before the child was born. Which I thought was neat. And Kyle, you shared that, right? I mean, you have a name picked out.
We do have a name picked out.
And that name is?
That name is, here's the big reveal. It is Barry Scott Borg. So yeah. I figured I would make 3GT a reality in the singleness of his person. So I'm kidding. I love you both, but it is not Barry Scott Borg. Actually, Judah's middle name is Scott, but it's after my dad. It's not after you, Scott. So
naturally,
we settled on the name Martin McShane.
All right. And just so our listeners have a bit of an idea how our minds work, as we talked about that, I knew that was the baby's name before the episode began, but that's where we got Marty McFly, because, you know,
Rachel's hope. So Rachel's hope is to call him Marty. She loves that nickname. And I told her, honey, I'm like a child of the late 80s, 90s. Like, you mentioned Marty in my presence, and I think Marty McFly from Back to the Future. And so my nickname for him is going to be McFly. And yeah. I'm going to say it just like Biff Tannen says it in the movies. Hey, McFly, it's going to be great. So, but there is real quick, there is significance to the name. Right. And the significance would be, I would probably attribute Martin Luther and then Robert Murray McShane, who was a 19th century Scottish preacher. Both of them had a very significant impact on me at a big turning point in my life. You know, I had grown up in an evangelical church. I don't think I really understood the gospel. I lived a number of years in rebellion and waywardness. And it, of all things, I went to a bookstore one day, and I still don't know why, but I grabbed a biography on a guy named Martin Luther, who I knew very little about. And that biography was very formative in my life, as the biographer just recounted the way in which Martin Luther came to an understanding of justification by faith alone and the hope of that. And at that same time that I was kind of processing that, having read that biography, somebody put me on to Robert Murray McShane. And in particular, a poem that McShane wrote that is really well known, Jehovah Sikenu, The Lord Our Righteousness. And I remember, so it would have been in 2005, early in 2005, reading both this biography of Luther and then this poem about the Lord our righteousness and what that means. Both of those were massively impactful on me, and followed up with actually reading quite a bit of Luther's popular works. And then I've always continued to love the ministry of Robert Murray McShane. Andrew Bornar put together the memoirs and remains of Robert Murray McShane, which is one of my favorite books. McShane's sermons, I continue to love and appreciate. And so it's a shout out to both of those men who were very impactful in my life.
Wow.
That's better than the Marty McFly that I was expecting.
Yeah.
Hey, McFly!
Kyle just made this such a touching episode.
we can ruin that here. Don't worry about that.
Well, I was thinking about, you know, using names of people, and our grandson Ezra shares my middle name. And then, of course, Joe Marsis, who you know quite well, Scott Hunt, who's now in glory.
Yes.
His middle name is Anthony. So our grandson's name is Ezra James Anthony York. And I'd always tease with Joe. I said, Joe, isn't that a lot better than Ezra Barry Joe York?
yes, it is. So, Kyle, congratulations. Can't wait to see pictures and celebrate with you.
Do you have the social security number and everything already? I mean, you've got the name and gender. And
Barry, you don't get social security numbers till they're born. I know it's been years since you've done this. It's been years since I've done it, but I'm pretty sure you signed the paperwork in the hospital. So,
We'll be praying for your dear wife as she has to put up with you during the delivery and the raising of this child.
Isn't that true? Isn't that true?
All right. Well, moving on quickly to our next topic at hand. Not that we have to move on quickly, because we always want to linger where topics lead us. But recently, pastor, broadcaster Alistair Begg was removed from a longstanding radio program that he had for some comments he made. So can one of you tell our listeners, if they haven't read the news or heard about this, what happened there?
Yeah, if you haven't heard, you're a bit of an ostrich. I don't say that insultingly, but it is all over social media right now. Alistair Begg was interviewed in October, and for whatever reason, that interview probably in the last 10 days has gotten a lot of attention. And it's because he was asked in that interview, well, they got on the topic. I've listened to the whole thing. I forget exactly how they got onto it. But Alistair Begg shared some counsel that he gave to a grandmother that reached out to him once. And the grandma had a grandchild who was going to be in a transgendered wedding, a same-sex marriage. And the grandma asked Alistair Begg, you know, can I go to that wedding? And Alistair Begg said, well, you know, and he acknowledged in the interview, these are hard questions. And every pastor that has to answer these questions knows that they're hard, because the counsel that we give could very well end relationships that mean a lot to people. You know, these are not ivory tower questions to be answering. And Alistair Begg recognized, like, there's a huge responsibility when you come to answer a question like that. And he asked the grandmother, does your grandchild know that you're committed to Christ? And she said, yes. And he said, does your grandchild know that your commitment to Christ means that you cannot agree with the choices that are being made? And she said, yes. And Alistair Begg said, well, in this particular situation, then, he's not speaking universally, but he said, in this particular situation, I told this grandmother that I think that you should go to the wedding and even buy them a gift. And it's terrible counsel. It's terrible counsel. It's wrong counsel. I don't think that is the pastoral counsel that should be given. But Alistair Begg is facing an onslaught of social media criticism and people rightly saying, you know, how can you do this? How can this be the counsel that you give? I think he's being a little sacrificed, Kyle's opinion, to the cultural wars God. I think some people are more concerned about the cultural war than the actual biblical, theological. And I'm not saying every critic, but I think a lot of them just want to get hyped up because this is a cultural hot button issue. But, you know, it is, in my mind, it's not the advice that I'd give in any context or any situation. But he's getting a lot of criticism for that. He kind of doubled down on Sunday night. He preached a sermon and basically said, you know, I'm not going to repent of this because I don't need to repent of it. And he said, you know, I stand opposed to LGBTQ things. He rightly pointed out that he was one of the first pastors in America in, what, 96, 97 to speak against Ellen DeGeneres when she came out as homosexual. And he said, you know, and I took tons of criticism in the late 90s for calling that out for what it was. And he said, we don't condone these things. Like, I'm not going soft on LGBTQ issues. He just said, in this one particular case of conscience, that's the counsel that I gave. Bad counsel, but that's kind of everything that's happening in a nutshell so far. And so Family Radio has now taken his program Truth for Life off. John MacArthur today announced that he's canceled Alistair Begg from coming to the Shepherd's Conference. And so there's fallout.
Well, you know, Kyle, you mentioned that's not the advice that you would give. But the question I think we need to have is, how do we deal with a brother who may have a little bit different opinion on an issue like this? I mean, is the correct response then to, you know, basically excommunicate them from everything they have been doing and then condemn them for all the good work that they've done? You know, what's maybe a proper response or a different response that maybe could have happened?
Yeah, the whole thing, I will admit, the whole thing makes me sad. I think Alistair Begg is the second best living preacher. I have benefited from his ministry for years. Still do on a weekly basis. I listen to his preaching. You know, and I think that the man's character and reputation has so far, to my knowledge, been nearly spotless. Like, he has really lived out the being above reproach and maintaining a good reputation. I think that, you know, when I think of all the popular pastors out there, personally, I would have said, you know, Alistair Begg is probably the one that has maintained the most integrity in the ministry. There's just never, that I've heard, there's just never been questions. There's never been concerns. So I don't think that, you know, it again, I think it's bad counsel. I think cases of conscience are exceedingly difficult pastoral work. to rightly inform people's consciences. You know, I would be just as angry at a pastor who just slams his fist down and says, absolutely not. You can't do. We have to inform people by the word of God how their consciences need to respond to these things. That's a huge stewardship and responsibility when you're an elder and when you're a pastor. I don't think we need to cancel him. Kyle's opinion, for what it's worth, and nobody's going to cancel me because nobody knows me. I don't let it be. Alistair Begg gave bad counsel. John Piper has given bad counsel. John MacArthur has given bad counsel. R.C. Sproul gave bad counsel. It happens. You know, I guess move on. His church is aware of it. You know, he's an independent. So there's no recourse outside of their local congregation. His pastoral staff is aware of it. They've talked about it. I think at this point you say it was bad advice. It was sinful advice, but that's me.
Barry, your thoughts?
Well, of course, our listeners are just hanging because Kyle said he was the second best preacher. So I know who Kyle thinks.
Yeah, I know.
The first best, it's Kyle.
Oh, Sinclair Ferguson.
Is it because of his accent?
Oh, it's both of their accents. UK men are just more gifted at preaching.
Yeah, they are.
But Sinclair Ferguson, this is terrible. This shows how undiscerning I am. He could preach heresy and I'd be like, oh, it just sounds so nice.
I do think that the situation is, as Kyle's saying, a sad one. That, you know, a couple of verses come to mind. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. That's one of the problems being on even like a podcast like this or being out in social media, is you can say one thing that, and again, he hasn't said he was wrong. He's kind of, as Kyle said, doubled down. We can talk about that in just a second, but that's part of the problem of being on stage, being trying to give counsel to someone. I don't know how well he knew this person, the situation. So those things, you know, I think counsel to people should be done more privately would be one of the things I'd suggest. Although I would go on to say that I would, that when you're going to a wedding, you're usually being called forth as a witness. And by being there, you are in a sense condoning what's taking place. And so there's no way I could go to a wedding where I felt strongly in my heart they shouldn't be getting married. So, that would be the counsel I would give. And, you know, there's the saying in Ecclesiastes, a dead fly spoils the ointment. And it's just a reminder to us how, you know, you can build a reputation up over a lifetime and a little bit of folly or whatever can really upset the apple cart. And so, yeah, I pray that this will pass over and people can realize that they need to be careful about overreaction, even though, again, I think that the counsel he gave wouldn't be what I would give.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, and I'm not defending it because, again, I would never give this counsel. You know, Alistair Begg clearly does not think attending a wedding affirms what is happening there. Barry and I would both agree it is. There's no escaping it. There's no escaping that it is an affirmation. It is a celebration of something that is unnatural. And it is a celebration of something that God has absolutely forbidden. I think one of the maybe the sadder part, you know, he admitted in his sermon where he doubled down, he didn't actually know the woman very well. She wasn't a member of his church. She emailed him. And it was a humble reminder as a pastor, you know, cases of conscience like that are best done pastorally in a very pastoral context, not these mm-hmm. flybys. You know, even that adds for me to the sadness, like, man, you're going to besmirch your ministry for a woman you've never met. You don't actually know, you're not involved with, you know, things like that. And I think, you know, it's a good caution to all of us. James says in James chapter 3, you know, that especially teachers, we all stumble in many ways and nobody can bridle the tongue. Every pastor has things that we need to think about when with the use of our words. I've also been encouraged just thinking, you know, we talked just a moment ago, we had Rosaria Butterfield on. And a significant part of that interview in her book is her acknowledging things that she said and did that she has now come to realize this actually affirms people in their sin. And I need to publicly repent and publicly retract of those things. And so, you know, I hope there are people speaking like-minded things to Alistair Begg right now. you know, I think Rosaria's example of humility and public repentance is one to really, really admire.
It's a good point.
And it also, you know, I think that what we need to learn is we can't be quick to just throw somebody out just because they're wrong. I mean, I think there has to be shepherding. There has to be, you know, going to this guy and saying, hey, you need to repent and here's why, rather than making it. And I know he said it in public, right? So you have to deal with the sin in public, but there's a way to do it without putting somebody back on their heels and in a defensive position and making them say something and do it right now, rather than working with them to see their folly. I think there's lessons that can be learned on both sides of this issue of how to deal with somebody when they say something wrong. And you know what, Kyle, you'll probably agree with this. I've said stupid stuff before.
Yeah. When haven't you?
One other thing that I think is worth considering in this whole thing is we also have to be very mindful of the fact that the world's waiting for us to stumble, waiting for leaders to stumble. Jesus was constantly having questions thrown at him to try to discredit him, discredit his ministry. And so we also have to be wise when we're, as leaders, answering questions in a public type setting like this. And again, I'm just mindful of all the time how important it is when I'm speaking more in a public fashion. It's like I represent the seminary. So there's so many things at times I want to say, not I hope mm-hmm. sinful things, but just I have to be more careful because I'm representing other people in our organization. So I just can't just say whatever I want to say anymore. And we just have to be really careful how our words are going to be used and even at times turned against. And I'm not talking about fear, like being fearful of what we're saying. I'm talking about being wise of what we're saying and when we're saying things.
Which really, Barry, I love that point, right? That so emphasizes the wisdom of Jesus. You know, because, you know, in this case, I don't think Alistair Begg was being cornered by a malicious person. He was being asked by a grandma who loves her grandchild.
Yep.
And he admitted he let his grandpa heart take over. And yet you think about the very fact, Barry, what you just said, the enemies would always challenge Jesus with questions. And we're not Jesus. That's why we need the great shepherd of the sheep, because he alone knows how to answer the questions perfectly. And I admire, when you think about it in that context, it really brings an admirable characteristic to Jesus himself that he never stumbled. Yeah. He gave the perfect advice. He dealt with every case of conscience perfectly.
I have just one last question about this whole thing, Scott, if I can. Does this mean you guys are going to boycott the Bobby Jones movie?
I don't think either one of us know what this Bobby Jones movie is.
No, we do too, because Barry showed us a clip once and it looks like Alistair Begg. Well, Alistair Begg is in it, right? Or does
I got it. I had him on the ropes. Kyle came through right at the end, but I had you guys on the ropes.
I would also just say, you know, this is why it's good to be Presbyterian every day. You know, Presbyterianism has ways these things can actually be dealt with more than independence. So there's my snipe.
Yes. And there is a great blessing in that to be able to appeal to to somebody above you to help you out and come alongside and shepherd you.
Or you can get beat up decently in an order.
In an orderly way. That's right. So we're running short on time. I do want to talk about this Texas situation really briefly. So as you guys might be aware, might not be aware, there's a little kerfuffle going on down at our southern border. I don't want to talk about
the kerfuffle. What? No, I mean, there's something going on at the southern border?
Some people may say. But so what has happened is the governor of Texas has taken upon himself to defend his border, and the esteemed president, a God-anointed, God-appointed leader for the United States has taken umbrage with Governor Abbott and so sued him. Now I have to be really careful here. The nine justices of the Supreme Court have sided with our president and said, no, Governor Abbott, you can't do that. And so,
Scott, I mean, you're an attorney, right? So they really just halted
right
a federal court's mandate that Texas the Border Patrol could not cut the concertine wire, right?
So, right.
Well, they actually didn't totally decide. They just said, no, you can go ahead and cut the wire.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you want to get down to the all the procedural stuff, which I appreciate. Yeah. So they overturned the ruling of a lower court. But this has caused quite a, you know, quite a controversy in the United States, one that we haven't seen in 150, 170 years. And so, what is the benefit of Christian doctrine at this time to know exactly how we should respond? And don't get me wrong, I'm not asking you to take sides here or, you know, say my governor's good because they did this or my governor's bad because they haven't done that. But where can we learn? What can we go to in Christian doctrine and theology to kind of figure out, hey, what do we do in a situation like this where our governor is saying one thing, our president's saying something else?
I think the two things that I would say, shooting from the hip a little bit, is that the Protestant doctrine, Calvin wrote about it, the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, this is a fascinating example of that, where a lesser magistrate, in one sense, depending on how you define the relationship between federal and state government, but a lawfully appointed magistrate is challenging the dictates of other magistrates. And I think this is a fascinating example of that. And I think, again, without totally weighing in, you know, Jeremiah Burroughs, the Puritan, has been formative in my own thoughts on this. And that is, in one sense, what we have here is a degree of civil disobedience. And Burroughs talks about how, look, the civil magistrate does not have power over the conscience. And just like we say in the church that God alone is Lord of conscience, that's true just universally. And if we don't feel that the government is functioning in a way that is actually for the good of the Commonwealth, and that goes against our conscience, there's a place there for the exercise of the liberty of conscience. And I think you need to follow other scriptural commands in the way that you do that, especially if you're a private citizen. But I think, you know, Texas is saying, well, what is being done here is not good. This is not for the good and the benefit. That's the role of the civil government. And so we are going to ensure that what is happening is for the good of the Commonwealth. And people can debate that. They can debate which is better, which is good. But I think it's a worthwhile discussion.
Yeah, I really agree. I think that...
Barry, do you have anything?
Yeah, just that... I mean, it almost goes back to... You almost made me think of what we were just talking about with Alistair Begg. I mean, one proper response when he first got that question might have been to say to this grandmother, what does your pastor and your elders think? You know, instead of him trying to be the expert here addressing a local matter of a family, maybe he would have stayed out of trouble if he'd have just told her to go to her own session and be instructed. She might have gotten the right answer that way. And I think in the same way, we've become so federalized, we look to Washington for everything, that this doctrine of the lesser magistrate, I think it's just going to increasingly arise across our land as we become more we're not as unified anymore. Factions are forming. And I think some of the states are not going to continue to support some of the things that the federal government's trying to push their way. Now, I have to confess, I grew up in the South, so I have a little bit of that in my blood, that, you know, the centralization of government is not healthy. We have to obviously have our union in a sense preserved as best we can, but when a governor is watching, in this case, people pouring over into his state, and it's causing problems in communities and neighborhoods in his state, he has a duty to protect. And if the federal government comes and says, that's our border, not your border, he has to still find ways to protect his people. So I think it will be quite interesting to see how this works out. And if you're a believer in that situation, I think you would be really wanting to look to the Lord and his word for a lot of wisdom as to how to best handle it.
Which Barry, you said and I think you're right. You know, you're not a prophet, I trust, but these are going to be very real questions that Christians are going to need to engage in coming years. Is how do we think through these things? And COVID showed us how terrible we are as Christians in thinking through some of that stuff. And yes. I think we need to be ready for it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. You know, we do have to be prepared in those ways and make sure our heart's in the right place and do what's right according to the word and our conscience. Well, guys, I have a session meeting I'm supposed to be at in about 25 seconds. So I'm going to have to end this pretty quick. I do appreciate the listeners joining us today on 3GT. I hope you've enjoyed this.
Where's your Biff Tannen quote?
It's will you just wait?
I'm done.
My goodness, Kyle, you're impatient. I mean, are you yelling at Rachel? Get that baby out of there so we can start raising it, so we can get the Social Security number.
I tried to yell that before December 31st.
Yes, it would have been a nice tax return. Anyway, listeners, we thank you for joining us. We invite you to continue listening, continue supporting. But I've got to make like a tree and leave. So we will see you next time.
No, it's make like a tree and get out of here.
Oh, I ruined it.
You biffed the quote. All right.
I did. I got to make like a tree and get out of here. I had
it's
that in my
leave,
mind. Kyle,
you idiot. It's leave.
It's leave. There you go. Well, thank you for joining us on 3GT.
Oh, man.
I can't believe I did that.